Welcome to the catch-up, guys. We're going to go between the sheets. You seem to enjoy that, boys.
Terrific in there. I like it in there.
Plus, we heard some more Keytruda miracle stories of that wonderful cancer drug that seems to be saving lives.
And we talked Chewbacca going snowboarding. There's all sorts of...
Oh, man, I still can't do that.
And we find out how people have survived Hurricane Irma in Miami.
The Volkswagen Amarok V6 Turbo Diesel Sportline Auto. From $55,990, drive away. Conditions at Volkswagen.com.au.
Let's do it. The PM, Rich Uncle Mao, calls us every Tuesday. It's an absolute honour to have him on the show. Good morning, PM.
Good morning to you, Brendo, and good morning to you, Marto, Robin, and I believe Ed's on leave, is he?
Yes, good morning, sir. He's having a baby.
He's having a baby. Well, haven't they come forward with fertility technology?
Look, there have been calls for you being irresponsible because you were holding your beautiful granddaughter Alice and a beer at the Swans game on Saturday night.
For the love of God, have people got nothing better to worry about? It was a light-hearted post I put on Insta and Facebook because I love my socials. And I said multitasking, and Wowzers started getting in a fluster about blowing beer breath over a baby. I mean, as you said yesterday on the show, and I'm a big listener, we live in Australia. It's a rite of passage, isn't it? They were also bleating about whether I should be holding a baby with one hand. Well, you know, they fail to realise that out of shot is my daughter Daisy, Lucy, three federal police officers, a photographer and the makeup department. It's like a slips cordon. I mean, and of course, I flipped the baby the moment the photo was taken. I don't want to hold a baby at the football.
Well, Malcolm, were you actually having a few beers at the footy?
Well, I quite enjoy a palate-cleansing frosty ale, Marto. Something European before the cheese platter and the foie gras arrives. You know, with a nice botrytis, a noble rot. Now, that beer in the plastic cup, it was a prop. And I mean, why plastic? I guess the proletariat can't be trusted with glass, can they? You know, they glass one another once they get excited. But out of shot, I had some Verve chilling and Flutes on Ice, Robin. Beer in plastic. I'm not a Bronco supporter.
Now, talking footy, who's your tip for the premiership?
Well, the Roosters are still in it, aren't they? The good old Roosters of Sydney. I sometimes go down there and I'm told to by my staffers and campaign managers. I go, good on you. You do a try, do one, and then convert that into offshore bonds in a foreign currency. But no, I was watching the Panthers game, and I think some of their players are terrific. Regan Campbell-Gillard and Dallin Witicki-Zelezniak. Oh, yes. Antonio Winterstein.
From the Cowboys.
No, he plays for the Cowboys, doesn't
he? Yes.
Have I got those names right, Lucy? I've been practicing all my... What about Jason Tamalolo? He's terrific.
Well, you're just a man of the people, sir.
I have no idea who those men are, and I don't care. Now, before I go, I just want to say the Triple M rocks Chermside. Oh. Get down there, go past the Golden Mile, get a good second-hand car, and then go to the shopping centre. Spend up big.
You said it, PM.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you, mate.
Get some influential friends and have a good laugh. Good night. Good night.
The following segment contains serious, sexy talk and music from Kenny G.
Between the Sheets with Robin Bailey.
I'm sure you blokes have never heard of Dr. Helen Fisher, but she is an expert on the chemistry of sexual performance. And she is here to tell us that there are some very misunderstood aspects of men's sexual performance in Australia. Now, there's a couple of bullet points here which I think you might be interested in. A bit of question and answer. Who falls in love faster, men or women?
I would say men.
Why?
I reckon women are slow to go. Because men, because we die sooner, we're more urgent. We've got to get it on.
No, or men also orgasm quicker and then they apologise. So that one of their ways of apologising to say I love you.
Oh, and also I suppose we attach emotion to a physical sensation. So we just go,
oh, I love that.
Good.
I mean, I love you. I really love that. I love you.
So you don't actually mean it. I'm learning a lot. You don't mean it. You just say it. And then
I really love you.
Oh, so you're connecting your pleasure to love. That's it.
That's what life's mainly about.
For you. Okay, so you're actually
for
correct.
For most men, Robin.
Men
we're,
fall
we're
in
talking
love.
On behalf of men.
Okay, so Mooney, you agree with that?
I reckon it's men fall in love quicker because they attach physical sensation to emotion.
Okay, well, you do fall in love faster, but it's because you are visual creatures.
Yeah,
it becomes an instant attraction.
Those two look real good.
Okay, so who are more dependent on their partners, men or women?
I reckon, I think men are needier, and I'm probably speaking from my personal experience here. I probably need my partner to be around more than she needs. Oh, God.
I would have said female.
Was that a revelation? What about you?
I would have said female.
Females are more dependent?
I think so. Yeah, you know what it goes back to? It goes back to, I know females in Africa, there was a study done, because there's such a fearful place, because there's lions and dangerous things, they are really dependent on men. Not so much here in Australia because of our absence of lions, but we do have crocodiles.
So if we
and
had a lion,
yeah, I think it's a real ancient thing.
Okay, well, actually, men are more dependent on their girlfriends and wives because they get fewer intimate connections with other men.
And they get hungry,
so the
men,
one
and hungry.
Time they get an emotional connection.
Not all men, don't judge me.
Is with their partner. Okay, your final question. Who will remarry if something happens to a spouse, i.e. they leave or they die or whatever? Who will remarry first, men or women?
I reckon it's men again because see point number two.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of...
Have you seen their mates? You see, they don't want to hang around with them.
No. But... you know, men. Most men die before their wives, and you see a lot of women decide to stay single after that. They just go, "I've got the cash. I don't need another one of those."
So. Thank God, they say.
Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. Men are much more likely to remarry after a spouse has died or deserted them because they don't like being on their own. Whereas some women, or the majority of women, go, "Phew."
Listen, what's this woman's name? What was her role? I don't want a name. What was her role?
See, I knew you'd get interested. Dr. Helen Fisher is her
name. Yeah, I don't want a name.
She's an expert on the chemistry of sexual performance.
Bet your Viagra has knocked her business about. Don't need her anymore.
Marto, Ed and Robin on the new Triple M.
I am feeling a little bit vulnerable this morning because I did something very stupid online last night.
Oh, really? Didn't delete your user
That's
user
right.
history?
Were you alone?
I was alone for a little bit, but I've got a MacBook Pro and it just completely fritzed out. The screen went crazy and then it just stopped. So I turned it off, turned it on, turned it off, turned it on. It wasn't working. You know, I don't know whether your computer has ever completely died on you, but it's a very disarming feeling. So I got my phone, went online on my phone, put in Apple support, and the first ad that comes up... you can play along at home if you want. It just says, call this number, expert tech. So I've gone, all right. Now, it's a paid ad. So I then end up on a phone call to a guy in India. And he's
going,
okay.
Me how the cricket's going? Don't you do that, don't you? Because we've got a 7-1 dayers coming up against them. That's how you get them in the palm of your hand. And then you start asking the technical stuff.
Well, he had me in the palm of his hand because he's like, yes, we'll help you. We need access to your computer. So I give him, and that immediately alarm bells are ringing. I didn't give him any passwords or any bank details, but I gave him my email address. Mm-hmm. And he said, turn the computer over and give me the serial number. And then he's like, we'll try and gain access to your computer. I said, so what, can you get all my data? And they said, well, he goes, yes, but we're a secure operation. Look, I'd had a couple of pinos, so I was uninhibited.
And you were alone, weren't you? Your wife was nowhere to be seen because if she was there, this would not be happening.
The brains of the operation.
I'm telling you.
She came home, the brains of the operation is correct, and she waves and she goes, are we on the phone? I said, my computer's broken down and I'm speaking to a guy in India. And she goes, hang up the phone. I said, no, whoa, he's helping me. He's gaining access to my computer. Anyway, so he got me to hold down shift and R and then turn it off and turn it on again, but he couldn't get in. So I said, listen, I'm going to wind it up there, buddy. And I don't know exactly how much he knows now or whether he's inside.
Have you checked your bank account this morning?
I keep checking my bank account.
But by the time if you check your account and the money's gone, too late.
Is that right? If the money's gone, don't the bank go, hey, well, this happened?
Yeah, this is partially our fault. Yes, yeah, they do, don't they?
No, because then you go, oh, I gave a guy in India access to my computer, at which point they went, you're an idiot, see you later.
Right. Oh, don't. all right. So, but I
wouldn't give it to any of his mates over there, would he?
No.
Oh, no. But the computer's not working, so can he still... He can't get inside the computer, can he?
Well, I go and take it to an Apple store.
How do scams work?
I'm taking it to an Apple store this morning. Or a Maxter or whatever.
I'm taking it to a man in the village today. But surely...
Surely, with
the serial number of a computer and your email address, he can't get that much.
I don't know, ask everyone else if that is an actual scam. Maybe he was above board. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Why not?
Hey, he seemed all right, didn't he?
Rush to judge, but I'm sure there's scams going on out there. And
I
all
still want to know how a guy, I paid for a cab going into Sydney Airport, right, with my credit card, still had my credit card, got scammed for $3,000.
Ooh.
The bank sorted me out for that one.
No, that one, that's not your fault.
How did they do that, though? Did they copy my card or something or other? Because it went for six slots of $500 at a shop around Redfern there somewhere.
Oh. No, they just go in with the, use the number. You can actually, you know, if you remember a number, you can say, listen, I haven't got my card on me. Can I just use my number?
But he might have got the number and then he needs that little CVC on the back.
If you've been scammed... Mm. Make Mr. Moon feel better.
Yeah.
I'm checking my bank details right now.
That's not going to help, love.
Yeah, because obviously it's a ticking time
bomb. What's your serial number? What is it?
Kate from Manly will make you feel better, but I'm sure. Kate, have you been scammed?
Oh, it was actually my mum got scammed about 4 weeks ago.
What happened?
So she was about to log on to her NAB or ANZ banking and all of a sudden this screen came up and started saying, alert, your computer's been compromised, call this number immediately. So, you know, she's 78, so she's just gone, oh, okay, called it up. Mm. They did the same thing, saying, we need to get into the back of your computer. 3 hours later, and after asking her name, her address, her date of birth, she was just thinking they were being very helpful.
They were white knights,
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they were doing all of this stuff and then, you know, I'll enter in your credit card details here because we're going to put you on a plan, you know, $30 a month for 3 years and then you're going to be completely protected. And then they called her after whatever amount of time. They then called her back and said, oh, for some reason that card didn't work. Can you give us another card? And she did.
Oh, no.
And so how much did it cost her, Kate?
Sorry. They only got $600 because the original card they gave her was her debit card and she was about to go overseas and hadn't, like, loaded all her money up on
well
the card.
Well played.
Oh, good.
So did anyone refund? Like, there was no bank that said, hey, you've been scammed. She just had to cop that $600?
No, because I happened to get... Because I'm in Brisbane, she's in Sydney. I got my brother. He went and found mum, took her straight down to the bank, told them exactly what happened, put a block on everything. Her computer guy literally then just jumped on and, you know, put malware devices and whatever he does through the system. But, had to restart everything.
Well, Moon will be all right. He's a struggling comedian. He's only got $52 in his account. All be good.
Thanks, Kate.
Yeah, I was offered a plan. He said, you know, we can do $200 for a year. And then I was about to give the credit card details and that's when the bell started really ringing.
No, that's when Mrs. Moon came home.
But he said, I'm going to try and fix your computer first. So he wasn't badgering me. So it was good.
Good scamming. Graham from Caboolture. What happened, mate?
Yeah, guys, how are we all?
Yeah,
good.
Wonderful. Did you get scammed?
Yeah, mate, on the internet. It wasn't through the computer. It was an eBay transaction. I bought a boat at the end of 2011, $5,000.
Yeah.
Pages all done up, looked authentic, all the rest of it. Did a bank transfer. It was a Brisbane address. So, yeah, nothing happened. So I followed up through eBay. eBay advised me that this person selling the boat wasn't actually registered with them to sell anything. So I did a bit more investigating. Got onto the police, got them onto it. I ended up finding out that the person with the scam actually lived in London. And my transfer, because it wasn't a secure transfer through the bank itself, just from my bank account to his bank account, there was nothing the bank could do about it.
Oh, no.
I spent probably four late night, early morning phone calls to the London police, and yeah, nothing ever come of it.
So you lost $5,000, Graham, and no boat.
Yeah, $5,000, no boat.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, Graham, that's a horrible story.
That happens to a lot of boat owners. $5,000 just disappears continuously when you own a boat.
Joe of Clontarf, what can you tell us? Is there some money going to be taken from Lawrence Moon's account anytime soon?
Good morning, guys. Firstly, Lawrence, you're a gold-plated idiot, mate. For starters.
That's a good really? Start. Oh, good start.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, rest assured, mate, you haven't been scammed. You're fine. You actually made the call, which is always a good place to start. But at the end of the day, unless you've got access to your computer, there is no issue. You have to physically access your computer. Usually you have to give them permission to do that. Not always, but in this case you haven't. I usually say to people who are working on the internet, treat it like your wallet. I suggest people go out to Australia Post or somewhere and buy a prepaid card. And whatever you do on the internet, only use that card, whether it be buying something off eBay, paying a bill or whatever.
Right.
That way, regardless of you know, if you do it by accident, you know exactly what you're doing.
Now, can I ask you this? He got me to hold down my control and R key after I gave him my email address. Did he get into my computer that way?
No, he didn't. Okay. So you're fine. Oh. You're lucky.
Thanks. Do you know what? This feels like I've been called to the principal's office and you've just given me a warning rather than the strap.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts and starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Hey, Moon, I know you have dealings with this Sydney Grill team, the Triple M's show, equivalent of ours down in Sydney. Gus Walland, you know him?
Yeah, Gus, he's a great bloke. I shared the commentary position with him during the cricket last year.
Of course,
Australia
you did.
Versus Pakistan.
Loves
and
his cricket.
Gus was doing the ball by ball, which was the realisation of a childhood dream.
Yeah.
He's a very sweet man. And also, his documentary series, Man Up, I think
it was. Man Up last year. It was
very
wonderful.
It's awesome.
Well, have a listen to this, because we spoke to him the other day, and it struck home because my dad died of melanoma, which became lung cancer, la la la. And his dad survived. Well, just have a listen to our chat from the other day. Keytruda.
Yeah.
I keep hearing about this saving people's lives.
Keytruda's a wonderful drug. Like you say, mate, I thought dad, it was all done and dusted. He was given 12 weeks. So I spent a lot of time down in Canberra. And I had conversations with dad that I'd never had before because I was sort of felt like I was forced to do it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this drug called Keytruda was floated around. And it's all about getting certain blood cells that will link perfectly with Keytruda, and you will recover. Everyone needs to have this super drug because it may work for you.
We're talking about curing cancer with him.
It's amazing. I mean, it doesn't work for everyone, though, does it? It's a select group of people.
Did you have anyone coming to you on the weekend after we played
that? I had so many.
That?
I had my phone went nuts with people going, what was the name of that drug?
Now, I don't know whether it's the same drug, but Jared Roughead, who plays the Hawthorn Football Club.
I believe
club,
it is.
He
it
is. Had melanoma that then ended up with, he had 6 or 7 spots on his lungs. And, you know, it was looking bad because it's secondary cancer. Then they turn his immune system on himself and it basically destroys the cancer.
I think
and
that
he
was
he is clear.
Yeah. Well, what we're looking for now is we've had lots of anecdotal evidence just from text messages. Give us a yell if you've got a miracle story from this new drug that seems to be curing cancer, Keytruda.
Sean of Narangbar, what have you got?
I had, stage 4 melanoma.
That's bad.
Stage 4.
What did
stage
they give you?
Stage 4 is go home, isn't it?
They give you a death sentence.
Yep. Yeah, I originally had 9 months, and that was about 15 or so months ago. But now I've been given the all clear.
You are all clear?
Yes. About 4 weeks ago, I had a PET scan. I've had quite a few scans in the last 12 months, but the last 3 or 4 have been clear.
Can you explain to me what the drug does and how it's administered?
Every 3 weeks I go in for an infusion. I'm also on oral drugs twice a day. But yeah, every 3 weeks I go in for an infusion for about, well, it usually takes up most of the day, but yeah.
Can I ask you, Sean, is it an exhausting process? Is it taking a lot out of you?
Like chemo?
No, well, I've never experienced chemo, but yeah, the effects of it aren't too bad. I mean, I suffer from a lot of fatigue. I used to suffer really bad fatigue, but it's really nothing compared to some of, you know, some of the treatments out there. But it's hard to explain. Is it a miracle? It is.
Wow.
Okay. I like the stars. Yeah.
Good absolutely. One, Sean. Good well on done, you, Sean.
God bless, mate.
Yeah. Karen of Highvale, wow. What happened with your husband?
He had stage one initially. Within 8 months, he was stage four with it in his liver and lung. Had a liver resection, and then they couldn't do the lung resection, so he went on Yervoy, which was sort of the first version of the immunotherapy before Keytruda, and it was 4 treatments, 3 weeks apart. He was given 12 months, and he's 2 years down the track, and he's doing really well. So
he was given 12 months. Karen, he was given 12 months to live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Karen, which he didn't want to know about. So,
no,
I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
What about the prognosis moving forward? Do they say it's a cure?
No, definitely not a cure. So, but immunotherapy is definitely helping. It's way better than what there was a chance down the track. Like if he had, Yervoy went on the PBS just before he was able to go on it. If he hadn't have had that opportunity, because it costs about $200,000 for treatment, so if he hadn't have had that opportunity, he wouldn't be with us right now. So same with Keytruda, it went on the PBS not long after. He hasn't had Keytruda because the Yervoy has worked for him so far. So it's yeah, so, you know, with melanoma, a lot of people don't seem to understand that at this stage you're never probably going to be cured, and you should always have your checks every 3 months after having any sort of, whether it be stage one or whatever. I believe is it'll come back and bite you, whether it's 10 years down the track or 5 years down the track or however.
Right, we all
good
should
luck,
be,
Karen.
We should, yeah, I mean, so far so good, but we all need to get our skin checked too.
Yep.
If you've got something that you're a bit worried about.
Hey, I've got Lucas here from Meadowbrook. Now, I spoke to Lucas yesterday because he got onto me via Facebook. Lucas, hello, mate.
G'day, mate. G'day, guys.
You're another one. Tell these guys your story, mate, about Keytruda.
Yeah, well, I was diagnosed in 2015 with stage 3 melanoma. I had no primary, so I just had a lump underneath my cheekbone, so I had no visible mole or anything. So that can happen. Wow. No, excuse me, in about 10% of cases, they say. But, yeah, I had a neck dissection, so surgery, where they remove lymph nodes. And
it's horrible.
I was 18 months clear. And in December last year, I had a recurrence, and they found a tumour in my lung. So I was given the Keytruda option. And, yeah, I've had 3 scans since, my first treatment. And, yeah, I'm all clear as well. So,
Lucas, how much does it cost for this drug? Is it being subsidised or is it super expensive?
No, it's subsidised for melanoma now. It's on the PBS.
It was $30,000 a go previously.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, immunotherapies, you know, they haven't been around, you know, that long. But, yeah, it's on the PBS for melanoma, and I'm pretty sure for lung cancer, they're trying to get it onto the PBS for that as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's like the previous caller said, it doesn't work for everyone and it's not a cure. But, you know, I know with melanoma, what their aim is just to try and make it, instead of a terminal illness, a chronic illness that can be dealt with.
You live with it. You don't die from it anymore.
Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, they're making, you know, great steps forward. But I think it's a bit premature to call it a cure.
Yeah, okay. But it's buying a lot of people a lot of time, which is a great thing.
If I came in this morning smelling a little odd, it was because I was wearing eau de petrol.
What do you mean?
I had a bit of an incident this morning. And look, I am not very efficient for want of a better word, when it comes to my car. I basically drive it. When it breaks down, I get someone else to fix it. I try and keep
it. So most people are now.
Yeah. I don't understand it. I don't need to understand it. I join the RSEQ, so if I have a flat tyre, someone can come and help me. And hopefully, most of the time, I register when the petrol light's on. Sadly, that wasn't overly the case yesterday because it must have been on for a while and I wasn't looking, because I got up this morning to come to work and turn my car on and there was the petrol light, and then I checked the computer gauge to see how much petrol I had left and it was saying about 15 Ks. Now, I don't live, well, I probably live about 15 Ks from work, and I'm thinking it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I've got to find myself a petrol station. So I tried to take a shortcut into Kenmore where I thought the Caltex was open. It wasn't.
Ooh. Oh, there's extra kilometres already. Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, okay, if I get on the Western Freeway, what if I break down and where is the next petrol station? Of course, there is the one at the Toowong roundabout.
Well, you're doing this equation in your head. Do I drive slowly to preserve the petrol or quickly to get there as fast as possible?
And yes, I did that equation. I also did the equation of, I wonder if Mardo's ridden his bike in, and if I do run out of petrol, can he come and save me? Right. I did that one as well.
Bike, always no help.
Bike?
Can I ask? No.
You got a sissy bar?
No. Remember the old days when we used to do that? I've got a lot of things there that just get stuck up your bum. But anyway, is that servo kind of near the
bike? Yeah. Might come back to that.
You know, well, little camera holders,
you know,
and stuff like that.
You should get a seat.
That's a novelty. Is the Toowong roundabout servo, is that open?
Yes, it is. And I made it. But here's my question.
Oh, you actually did get fuel.
I did. I got it. And hence why I got a little excited. So I filled it to the actual brim of the brim of the brim and it splashed over. And that's why I smell like petrol. But my question is this. You know, when it comes to that little gauge, the computer gauge that tells you how much fuel is in your tank, how right is that?
I reckon you've got another 30 Ks.
Do you?
I reckon 30 Ks.
I reckon you've got another 30 Ks at zero.
See, so I went the opposite way. I went, oh my goodness, it's being conservative. I probably have 10 when it says 15. I better get me to some petrol
real quick.
No,
they would never be conservative. They'd always give you a few kilometres over, because otherwise a lawyer would run out one day and he'd sue them.
Yeah, maybe 30's a bit. I reckon it's 30, zero, I reckon you've still you're got right. 10.
Because not every car, don't forget, not every car has the actual amount, like has a computer LED screen. Some of them just have the light goes on and you guess how much fuel you got.
I want someone to tell me how this works. I'm sure that someone listening is much smarter and has been in this scenario. Maybe, in fact, you have run out of petrol.
Can I tell you, even if you made it to work, all right, let's assume you didn't find a servo to stop it and you thought, I made it to work. I bet it wouldn't have started again. You need a certain amount of fuel to get dragged up to actually get it underway. But once you're underway, it's pretty efficient the way the fuel gets used.
Okay.
Now, Robin, I'm surprised that you're asking for an expert to tell you exactly what's going on when there's two men here that could guess.
And I'm not very good with all of this stuff, and I'm usually, because these boys have been laughing all morning about how the women in their lives are pretty crappy with
petrol. No, hold on, let's get a return to it. Both our wives, whenever we hop into their car, it's well and truly below half, usually around empty.
I know, but I'm always one of these people, because I'm a single mum, and up until last week my son didn't have his licence. If I run out of fuel, who am I going to call? Unless it's you, Marta, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm not sure you'd come.
On our arvo, be all right.
We'll come and help you out. You can call us.
Anyway, so I'm
133353.
I just wanted to know and understand the limitation of the petrol light.
What sort of car you got?
I've got a big Mazda CX-9.
Mazda, righto.
So it's a newish one, and it's got a little computer that tells me.
Some people have a real go. Like they go, I reckon I can do it, whereas you went, I think I need fuel.
I was scared. Mick of Bow Desert, tell me about driving with no petrol.
Yeah, my boy had a footy game down at Runaway Bay, and I left Runaway Bay and on fuel light and thought, oh, shit, there wasn't many servos on the way, and got to Canungra, there's no servo on the Bow Desert. So I've done about 70 Ks on fuel light, I reckon. Easy.
And up hills too, up and down hills.
Yeah, up that gorge there at Canungra and everything. Yeah. The servo shuts at 7 o'clock in Canungra and there's nothing at Bow Desert until you get the next morning. So I went to work the next day as well and then got fuel. So
what sort of car?
For 3 days.
What do you got? What are you driving?
Just a 2001 little Hyundai Elantra is my runaround car, and it bloody runs on the smell of an oily rag. So
it literally does.
Literally.
Thanks, Mick. Lisa of Surratt, you drive a Prado. What happened?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm from out west.
Yes, and... Surratt.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to Brisbane.
I beg your pardon?
Welcome to Brisbane.
I live in Toowoomba now. However, I was from Surratt. So leaving Tara to Dalby, it's 49Ks. And I just ran the gauntlet and it was 49Ks. So just over 40Ks you can drive in Prado.
I love that confidence.
I love it. You guys are living dangerously, aren't you?
But at least we have to live dangerously because there's bloody nothing out there.
Well, exactly right. So what would have happened if you run out of petrol?
Walking.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know, pull up a road train or something and hitch a ride into town.
Sounds like you're living in a Mad Max movie.
Thanks, Lisa.
Oh, look, Ryan, another one from Bow Desert, mate. What about you? Have you ever gone close?
Oh, mate, I used to live on the edge all the time when I was a teenager.
Wow.
A couple of things. The first thing, if you run out of fuel with an electric fuel pump, occasionally the problem is that it's not primed, so it's not going to suck up the new fuel that you put into the tank in some instances.
That's what happens with a diesel. That's what happens with a diesel, Ryan.
Yeah, same sort of thing. Then the other thing, with your car, Rob, sounds like it'll be going on average fuel consumption per 100 kilometres. So if you've got a heavy foot, the average that it gives you is going to be much lower than if you've got a light foot. So it really depends on how you were driving the car before you started it that morning.
Like a maniac, but that's just me normally.
Yeah, well, you're using a lot more fuel driving like that.
Maniac, yeah. Okay, thank you. That's good
watching
to know.
Watching Robin drive is like watching a car in a cartoon. Yeah. Just like, how's it doing that?
Jay of Springwood. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Robin and boys. How are you?
Yeah, you sound like you've got some advice like my father used to give me. What is it?
Yeah, my dad used to say to me, mate, never get it down to the red lines because it'll be just sucking all the gunk out of the bottom of the fuel tank and cause you more problems in your engine.
Let's just explain to everyone. Now, Jay, every time you put fuel in, there's a little bit of dirt, and that sinks down to the bottom of the tank, and then gets pumped up. Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly right. So the more that Robin lets it run right dry, the more she's doing damage to her engine.
Has anyone ever seen the gunk in a fuel tank, or is that just bloke mythology?
I'm with you, meanie.
I've seen a bottle of petrol and there's never any dirt or floaties in it. That's just dad advice.
That's just dad advice because he doesn't want to come and save you.
Yeah, that is true. That is so true.
Marto and Robin on Brisbane's Triple M.
The next billion seconds are the most important in human history as technology transforms the way we live and work. The smartphone, barely a decade old, has given billions access to information and capacities they've never had before. It's changing what we can do, and it's changing the shape of the future. So what does that future look like? Hi, I'm Mark Pesce, the host of The Next Billion Seconds, a new show on Podcast One. Join me as I speak to some of the brightest minds shaping that world, the people who are spending their lives forming that future. We'll hear about their work in helping shape those next billion seconds. Listen at podcastone.com.au or on the Podcast One app.
As the mop-up continues over in the US and in Florida, guys, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. She used to work as a Brisbane traffic chopper reporter, and she's gone and married an American and is living in Miami, Florida. Hello, Amelia.
How you going, Robin?
Tell us about the storm. Did you live through it?
Yeah, I did. Obviously, I'm sure there'll be many people who didn't or who are injured. At the moment, all those kinds of numbers haven't come out yet. We're just praying for everyone's safety, really.
What happened?
Well, where I live, I was okay. I was rather inland, but plenty of people on the beach, particularly around the Miami area and on Miami Beach, were affected really badly. Three cranes fell down in Miami Beach.
Wow.
Off buildings, of course. We had some really bad problems with roads being deteriorated. And now one of our main problems, because I'm a traffic reporter here too, is that people are trying to get back into these areas with lots of flood damage causing gridlock on all our roads now.
Hey, what do you know? I can sit in Brisbane. I've been watching CNN and Fox News. What do you guys know about what's going on around you?
Well, as far as I know, we actually have curfews put in place from the city. So I'm meant to be working till 7 p.m. The curfew begins at 7 p.m, so I don't know what I'm going to do. I might have to leave earlier. We have police directing all of our traffic lights as far as I know, the damage that's been done around me is mainly just trees uprooted. There was a large storm surge, and a lot of the beaches have been closed up.
Amelia, you've been without power for quite a while. So what have you been doing to keep yourself occupied?
Oh, look, no power, no Wi-Fi. We've been dancing in the lounge room. We've been doing lots of yoga with our family. She likes yoga. Yes.
Hello.
Blackjack bit of downward dog. A fan favourite.
So you weren't directly in the eye of the storm when it passed over.
And we were so lucky, Robin. We were forecast for it to come straight over our house. But it missed us, thank goodness, because it would have been really devastating had it done that. We were also in not only the hurricane eye and the cone of, what do they call it? The cone of uncertainty is what they call it, when they're not sure where it's going to go, but where it could possibly go. We were in that. But we also had tornado watch. So every 5 minutes, our TVs would pop on and scream at us with a tornado watch. Our alarm systems were going off. Our fire alarms were going off. It was just really stressful.
Amelia, you saw enough cyclones when you lived in Queensland, and you looked at North Queenslanders and their relaxed attitude and how they'd catch a boat to the pub and all the rest of that. How did the Americans' response to a thing like this, to a cyclone and a flood, compare to Australians?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that going on. People sit in their boat and have a shot of vodka and just go, you know what, whatever, this is what's going to happen.
Oh, your rednecks are
really
the same.
They're very similar, especially in Miami. They've got a similar kind of climate as well. So it's nice and warm, everyone's pretty relaxed. Of course, there are the occasional people that are getting really stressed out, not being able to return home, who have just come back from somewhere like Orlando or Atlanta and now are stuck in their cars so close to home but can't get back in.
Yeah, it must be horrible for those people who have lost everything.
Yeah, a lot of people have, especially down at the Florida Keys.
So what happens now, Amelia? Is the city expecting to get back to normal in the next week?
Yeah, well, actually today a couple of places were reopening. We stopped at a gas station to get some coffee and the guy just opened his doors and was removing trees from out the front just to let people get in and get whatever they need. A couple of the Woolies type stores are trying to open. We're just trying to get back to normality. The emergency services number one priority is just opening the roads. And then power is second to that.
And what's the forecast for the next couple of days? Is it
heavy amounts of Trump, I think. That's what it'll be.
Yeah, I would not be surprised.
Good to hear you say, Amelia. Thank you.
No worries at all, guys.
Hey, I think we're all over this story, but for everyone else's sake, I'll take you to Cooma, which is in the foothills of Kosciuszko, the down below Thredbo, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone knows where that is? A cold place, and in front of the courthouse yesterday, there was the vision on the news last night started with a guy just sitting there, 50-year-old bloke, having a durry, and then it started to tell his sad story.
A man who bashed the CEO of Thredbo in a Chewbacca costume has faced court, this time wearing a colander over his head.
Okie dokie.
So why was he wearing a colander, people may ask? Because he belongs to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. It's an Australian church that started some years ago. They call themselves Pastafarians.
How many people in this?
Thousands of members worldwide, Australia-wide, making it a legitimate religion.
Thousands?
What's it called? Let me Google it.
The Church of the Flying Spaghetti
Monster.
All right,
well, that's what
Pastafarians.org.au.
That's what he told. Yeah, that's where he described it all.
Keith Wass is part of a religion called the Church of the Spaghetti Monster and says colanders are sacred objects.
All right, so that's what they were saying. I didn't realise any of this. Did you see the footage of him actually snowboarding in the Chewbacca outfit with a colander on his head, and he was scaring the hell out of kids, and that's why the CEO of the mountain said, mate, you got to get that suit off. You're scaring kids, and he's whacked him in the head.
Well, that's where I think we have a bit of a problem. I think that if someone wants to go up to the snow in a Chewbacca costume,
is that good or bad?
I think it's fine. You know, most people are aware of Star Wars, and surely kids didn't actually think it's the abominable snowman. So you know,
but
if a Wookiee wants to go skiing, they should be allowed to. And all I've got to say about this is
how do you do that?
But I'm actually part Wookiee. So what you shouldn't
do... But it's the problem is the two of
them. What you shouldn't do is pick up your snowboard and smash someone in the face with it. That's not right.
Let's have one more listen to This Is Him and explaining himself.
Hollanders are our most holy object in the religion. People come up and say, oh, nice hat. And I can say, well, it's not a hat, it's a colander.
All right.
Got to stop you right there, mate. Yeah, that's, it's a colander.
It's offensive.
So actually, the interesting thing is he went into court and the magistrate took his religion on board and didn't ask him to remove his colander or hat.
Did you see he's one of only two people in New South Wales who are allowed to have their driver's license photo
with the colander?
With the colander on.
Yeah, well, next time I go for my renewal, I'll be wearing a large pot.
What's the religion?
Yeah, what's the religion? Have you started
a
one?
Superfarian.
Well, the best of Keith living his best life there.
That is so impressive, Lawrence. I want to know how to do that.
I don't know.
Getting you to Hawaii tomorrow. You could be the next couple, Triple M.
You've got to relax your gag reflex a little bit.
Okay, there we go. We might end on that. TripleM.com.au is where you go to register to get to Hawaii with us tomorrow.
When you say end, my career or this section?
Bit of both, Moon.
That'll be decided shortly.
Bit of both.
Can I pay a tribute to Sylvester Stallone?
Why has he died?
On Nine Go was Rambo First Blood Part 2. What a genius this bloke is. I know we all laugh and go, can't even speak properly, but you'd think he made Rocky in 76, in 79. Oh, is that the right year? 82. So he was doing, he did the third Rocky. The same year he did the third Rocky, he made the first Rambo. What he started, if some person did it now, it was worth $300 million, even that one movie, Rambo Part 2, all right? What a movie it was. If you don't remember, he was arrested. You know, Rambo got arrested at the end of part one.
He was a Marine, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he went a bit nutso, but they put him in a federal jail and started part two, Rambo part two. Of course, they want the movie to go. The colonel came to him at the front gate and said, John, we need you to go back for a special. Oh, we'll let him do it.
John, I told you that I'd help you when I could. Yeah. The risk factor is very high. You'd be temporarily reinstated in the forces. And if the mission's successful, there may be a presidential pardon. You interested? Yeah, good.
All right, that's about all he says, because you know what happens to the rest of the movie?
I'm coming to get you.
Okay, that'll do it. We all get the impression.
So on, so forth.
What a genius. I never thought about it. Sylvester Stallone was an absolute genius. $300 million, that one movie.
Two big franchises, Rocky and Rambo. Incredible. Rocky, of course, six movies, and he won an Academy Award for the original screenplay too.
Did he?
Yeah.
He would have paid the house off.
Oh, some.
But, you know, both his original ideas, I suppose, you know, when you're completely ripped like that, you think, well, what am I going to do with this? Maybe a boxing movie and a Marine. But, I mean, for all of that, there's a weird kind of story that he's more famous for. I don't know whether you're across this one, but apparently he was shooting a movie.
Is this about audio problems?
It is about audio problems. He was mic'd up and he went back to his caravan during a shoot in Canada and he was instructing a young production assistant on...
on what, Mooney?
Well, he was just instructing a young production assistant and... had a pleasure in, yes. And It's what he's become most famous for. I can't exactly use the words, but it involved a cup.
Moon, can I tell you something while you continue with the story in a second? What happens, Robin? You know how they put on referees, they put the mic, they mic them up, okay? What happens sometimes, they get a bit enthusiastic before the game and get nervous and they've got to go to the toilet. As a commentator, I'm sitting there waiting for the game to start just before the teams run out. Right. The ref's in there going, he's relieving himself in the toilet while I'm listening. And you've got to go, mate, we get our director, we go, can you tell him to turn his mic off while he's in the dunny?
Just take the power pack off.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know. Well, was that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, well, what the audio assistant actually did was, because he could hear Sylvester Stallone going through some pleasure sounds and instructions, he actually put it on the external speakers so everyone could hear.
that's
it, baby. Yeah.
So is there, hang on. Is there any proof of this? Is there any recordings? Is there any way that this can be validated, or is this just an urban myth that
he
started to talk about his manhood?
It may be an apocryphal story, but it is well and truly on the internet, on, you know, urban legends and all of those kind of site. So, yeah, it's been reported as ad nauseum on the internet, so I believe it.
So that's three great franchises.
Yeah, and I want to believe it.
Yes, absolutely. Marto and Robin, Triple M.